Elmer's getting out of here already. He must know what's coming. So, if you know anything about Thanksgiving, you know that it really started as a part of a small community, a response of that community to the peoples around them and to God. That response became a colonial response, and then finally, I believe in the last two centuries ago, finally our nation made a declaration that our response on Thanksgiving was to God for divine protection and provision. But being grateful or thankful is actually a universal experience. When good things happen, or we're on the backside of a rough stretch in life, there is something instinctive in all of us to have this feeling of gratitude. For some of us, it's thank goodness. For others of us, it's thank God. And for all, it's thank somebody. And while we express it in different ways, we are all thankful. But when it comes to thanking each other, that's quite a different story, isn't it? It's not quite so intuitive. It's not quite so fluid. It's not quite so instinctive. Not only that, but when we withhold gratitude, we can create a gap, an unfilled space in relationships or in a relationship, which if we allow that to go on too long, creates a glitch in the relationship over time. If it goes on too long, it undermines the integrity of the relationship. In fact, few things sting more than ingratitude. And here is why. Ingratitude communicates, I don't see you. I don't recognize you. I don't recognize what you've done or the sacrifices you've made. It communicates instead something like this. You owe me. So I don't need to thank you for what it is that you think you did. You see, ingratitude isn't neutral, neither is gratitude. But ingratitude isn't neutral. It's the opposite of what we expected somebody to give us or what we thought we earned or deserved. And it hurts. It hurts. And what's interesting is the other person really didn't do anything. They just didn't do. At the same time, who likes to point out somebody else's ingratitude? It seems kind of childish. Well, you never said thank you. Oh, you never show any appreciation. Who wants to say that? And the other person, what can they really say in their defense except, oh, I'm sorry. But what you really hear, and what I really hear when somebody says, oh, I'm sorry, is, I'm sorry, little baby, you who needs constant reassurance and affirmation. So bringing it up is kind of uncomfortable. Sometimes ingratitude is expressed in nonverbal ways. You do something for somebody else, and the first thing out of their mouth is they're explaining to you why you didn't do it right or why you chose the wrong color. But most ingratitude is really the absence of words for deserved recognition. The only thing that looms large when we're the victim of ingratitude is all that we see from there on out is somebody else's ingratefulness or ingratitude to us. It's visible to us everywhere we go. I can't believe they didn't say thank you. I tried at my best and they didn't say thank you. And boy, they're just always, they're always missing me and not saying thank you. And that's all we see. But you know what? The perpetrator is invisible. The recipient is always aware, but the culprit, rarely so. Now, you don't have to raise your hands this morning, but it would make me feel good if you did. How many of you have ever felt taken for granted? Hey, one guy back there not felt in. All right, very good. Amen. All right. If you have ever been accused of being ungrateful, you've probably gotten defensive about it. Defensive because you were accused of not feeling something. I think you took me for granted. You look at the other person and you say, like, well, how do you know how I'm feeling? And when we get defensive, we wonder how people can know how we are feeling. In fact, we'll say things like, well, that's all wrong. I'm grateful. But what we really are saying is I'm grateful on the inside. And while maybe it's true, it's meaningless because unexpressed gratitude is experienced by other people as ingratitude. Or another way, gratitude and ingratitude are relationally determinative. Gratitude and ingratitude determine how much of yourself you will trust to somebody else and how much they're willing to trust themselves with you. You know what? Our hearts gravitate towards recognition and gratitude. It's not a decision. It is a response. In fact, don't let anyone out-grateful you this week or any week, because our hearts gravitate towards recognition and gratitude. Mark and Mike, you guys always look so dapper with those great-looking suits. Feels pretty good. I don't know what we'd do without you, Debbie, because you just play those hymns. Even when they don't sing, you just keep playing along. You do a great job. Oh, yeah. Oh, Rita over there, what nice thing could I say to Rita? You look lovely this morning, and you are always there on the keyboard. We really appreciate that, don't we? Amen, yes. Feeling pretty good, aren't you? Yeah. We gravitate towards that stuff. We eat it up. You're looking lovely this morning, Gene. Good to have some positive comments this week back and forth on the email. And I didn't get to that trials thing, which you saw, which probably everybody read wrong and just kept reading. But you did. Yeah. Gloria back there. She just, 58 boxes. That's great, Gloria. We'll do 60 next year, won't we? We'll try, okay. You see, we respond when people treat us with gratitude and recognition and appreciation. But you know, there was a narrative found in the book of Luke in which Jesus kind of raises the gratitude bar on all of us. He raised it for the people whom he was dealing with at that moment. He raised it for his initial followers, and he raises it for us today. Luke begins in chapter 17, right? Verse 11. Now, on his way to Jerusalem, Jesus traveled along the border between Samaria and Galilee. If I'd have been smart, I'd have put a map up there and you could see that area between Samaria and Galilee. Jesus traveled along the border there because it was kind of on the outskirts. It gave him a little bit of privacy. And this area was remote. It was sparsely populated. And it says, as he was going into the village, 10 men who had leprosy met up with him. All right? Now, people with leprosy hovered between life and death. That's right. They weren't dead, but they really weren't living. Worse, they were, get this, we've heard it for the last 18 months, socially distanced. They watched everybody live life. They were highly contagious. Folks did with people who had leprosy, they would not experience pain like everybody else. They oftentimes, in a culture that required physical work just to survive, they would end up getting injuries that often went unnoticed and unattended, and because of that, their bodies would over time deteriorate. They lived on the outskirts, and when they came near, they had to warn everybody they were coming. Consequently, they created their own community. They grew their own crops. They survived the best they could. So in this writing, you have a colony of lepers eking out life in a remote portion of Galilee. In fact, that was so remote that some of the people from Samaria, the Samaritans, came and lived kind of in this area. Nothing to do, let me tell you, with the story, but at the end of the story, we will find out that this community was comprised of Jews and Samaritans, this little colony, two groups that would have had nothing to do with each other for political and religious reasons. But here's the thing. Pain and suffering and alienation have a way of minimizing differences and maximizing what folks have in common. So when folks need each other, politics and religion just aren't front burner issues. Just think about that. Luke goes on, they stood at a distance, social distancing. They covered their faces. You all been wearing those masks, right, for the last 18 months. And they called out in a loud voice, Jesus, Master, have pity on us. Jesus is on an outskirts of an outskirts village. They come close. They know his reputation. They call him Master, a term that is reserved for continuous followers of Jesus, which clearly these guys weren't. But desperate times call for desperate measures. And he was their only hope. And the text says, when he saw them, he said to them, go! Not what they really wanted to hear. They have been hearing, go, for forever. But when Jesus said to them, go, he isn't through. He says, go and show yourself to the priest, to which they thought, show them what? We have leprosy. They're not real anxious to see us. Nobody is. But Jesus had a triple purpose. According to the law, if you had, and here's another word we've been dealing with, been quarantined, all right? If you had been quarantined, you had to go to the priest to get the all clear before you could return to society. So they're wearing masks, they're socially distanced, and they've been quarantined, all right. But he says, listen, you go to the priest to get the all clear before returning to society. The implication is you go to the priest, you'll get the all clear. But more than that, there was 10 of them that were going to show up. The priest would see what had happened, that it was an unprecedented event, and they clearly demonstrated a miracle. Something to add to Jesus' reputation and something for the priest to see that was undeniable and demonstrated a miracle. And their willingness to go before anything had changed was an example of extraordinary faith. For if nothing else changed, they would have been considered fools. So this whole incident has kind of a lot hanging on it. What do you do in that situation? Jesus says, go. It didn't make any sense, but since Jesus said it, they went. The scriptures say, as they went, they were cleansed. How do you do it? I don't know, but they're cleansed. They literally walked by, starts with an F, ends with an H. Faith, right. We throw that term around a lot in this day and age, but their response to the promise and the prompting of Jesus before they knew the outcome, that was walking by faith. Boy, this side sounds louder than this side, and there's like five times as many of you as over here. Maybe I should just talk to the spiritual people, huh? No. Then the twist. One of them, when he saw that he was healed, came back. He returned. He completed the loop. He filled the gap. He came praising God in a loud voice. He literally threw himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him. No more social distancing. No more willing to just feel grateful. He demonstrated it. He expressed it. And think of it. As much as he wanted to go back among the living, put this experience behind him, as much as he knew all of that, he had to close the loop. Jesus had just given him his life back. And so he did what he felt he needed to do. He went back and thanked the one who enabled him to move forward. And I don't know about you, but I honestly think that Luke, looking back, must have smiled as he penned these next four Greek words, five in the English. And he was a Samaritan. You remember the Moneyball movie with Brad Pitt? He said, there's everybody, and then there's 50 feet of crap, and then there's us. Well, that's where the Samaritans were. They were down on the bottom rung in Jewish society. He went back to the one who moved him forward. And the reason Luke shares this seemingly unimportant detail comes to light when you read the entirety of Luke's gospel. Over and over again, Luke highlights encounters from people on the outside, people who the first century audience would have expected Jesus just to say, hey, I don't want to have anything to do with them. But over and over, it was the outsiders who experienced or showed the most gratitude. They weren't confused over how undeserving they might have been. Their pride and busyness didn't get in the way of closing the loop. It didn't get in the way of expressing their gratitude to Jesus. But the incident doesn't end there. Jesus asks, We're not 10 cleansed. 10? Where are the other 9? Jesus is making a stinging observation. Something's missing. The 9 others who missed their opportunity, something's missing. It's incomplete. The circle's not closed. But the window to close it now has closed. And if you're a parent, how many of you are parents out there? All right. Yes, some of you. Okay, very good. Or you had a parent. You will get at what Jesus is getting at here. What was the thing that your parents always said to you, or you always said to your kids when they received a gift from somebody else and you were standing right next to them? What do you say? Yeah. Usually it would be the proper way is to say thank you. But my dad, he used to say, what do you say? What do you say? Thank you. There's an urgency. You need to close the circle. You need to connect the dots before it gets going too far. That's what Jesus was pointing out here. 9 had missed the moment. It was gone. How ungrateful could they be? Their lives had been changed. They don't have to eke out a living anymore on the fringe of society. They're not. They can go back to the work and the community and the church and family. But don't we respond like Jesus sometimes? When people appear ungrateful. Where are those guys? Ah, jeez, you can't come back and say thank you. But before we judge, think if you went back to the 9, what would they have said? Not grateful. What, are you kidding me? Our hearts were filled with gratitude. They felt it. The problem was they didn't express it. And Jesus is like, he's baffled. No one returned to give praise to the Father except this one foreigner, right? Yeah. Only one returner. He's also suggesting the others may have been Galilean. They may have been part of the Jewish group. They turned their backs on the one who had healed them. And then he turned to the one and said, rise and go. Second time he hears Jesus say, go, don't be around. No reason to stay, Jesus is saying. The circle's been complete. And then he makes the statement, your faith has made you well. Man, we're done. I was short on this one too. Doggone it. Let you people beat the Presbyterians to wherever it is that you're going today. 3 observations, though, real quick. 1, we've already talked about it. There is no neutral ground. Our feelings don't count because we don't express them. They don't count if we don't express them. You gotta say something. You look lovely today there. I'm so thankful you're here today. You gotta express it. Our feelings don't close the loop. Worse, the gratitude we feel but don't express is felt the opposite way by the person on the other end. We feel grateful, they feel unappreciated and forgotten. The other thing is telling folks how grateful you are for somebody else other than taking the time and tell that person, even if they are around but not part of that conversation, doesn't count. I could brag on my spouse. I could tell you, she makes sure I get up at 7 o'clock on Sunday morning to make sure I make the whole round before the end of the day. She cooks wonderful meals when she cooks. She does, ironing. Well, no, not ironing. cooking, well, not cooking, laundry, house cleaning. Yeah, she's just a wonderful girl. I'm lucky I have her. But you know what? If she doesn't, it doesn't count. It doesn't count. Bragging on your spouse in front of other people, but never bragging on them privately, never expressing gratitude directly to them, isn't closing the loop. In some cases, expressing gratitude to others about your spouse or your family, but not expressing gratitude to them can be insulting. Second thing, ingratitude feels like rejection. Over time, unexpressed gratitude has the effect on people and on relationships just like rejection does. It creates a gap. Our hearts gravitate towards acceptance, whether it's real or imagined. Appreciation feels like acceptance. So if you want a child or a spouse or an employee, if you really want their heart, express gratitude. Man, I had a little six-year-old this morning. I was getting the computer set up, and I said, come on, honey, help me with this. And she got the whatever it was, and I got the computer and the cord over here, and we're working to get. She was just, you know, I said to her, thank you. I don't know how I'd have done this without you. And she just beamed. You know, I helped him. We did it. You express gratitude to people over and over again, you will get their hearts. You don't express gratitude to people, you may get their hand, but you'll never get their hearts. They may stick around, but the relationship will eventually become void. And finally, last observation, unexpressed gratitude may indicate an inflated view of self. The message of ingratitude is this: I've done this without you. I didn't really need you. I don't owe you anything. Isn't it true that arrogance and ingratitude are found under the same rock? Arrogant people are often ungrateful people, and ungrateful people come across as arrogant. So if you really want to be honest for a moment, or if you would be honest for a moment, is expressing gratitude difficult for you? Are you quick to point out that, you know, you picked the wrong color, or, you know, it would have been better to do it this way, rather than just recognizing what's been done for the good that's been done? And if you are like that, have you ever dug around on the inside to figure out why you're wired that way? Gratitude feels like, if you will, an admission of weakness. Like maybe you couldn't have accomplished what you accomplished without help. But guess what? You can't. You can't. And in the wake of all of your progress and your successes and the good old days and all of that, academically, financially, relationally, athletically, there are dozens of people who have facilitated your success. And acknowledging their role isn't a weakness. It's actually a sign of maturity. It's evidence that you have walked away from an unhealthy sense of independence. Gratitude is evidence that you have perspective, that you didn't get to where you are on your own. So back to Luke. You know, I called this message giving thanks, but I should have called it afterward. Be number one. Be number one. Be like the one who went back. Not to make it a habit of our lives, or let's make it a habit of our lives to go back and to thank the people who have moved us forward. Who has helped you or is helping you move forward? Sure, you pay them maybe. Or maybe you married them, or maybe it's your mom, I don't know. But have you expressed gratitude lately? Maybe you feel it, but you haven't expressed it. Why not? Are you more like the nine or more like the one? You took what was given, you kind of got distracted, new opportunities, new freedoms, and you never circled back to say, thank you. Someone tells a story or the story of your life. Will it be the story of being the one or the nine? The good news is you get to determine the end of that story. Gratitude unexpressed is simply ingratitude by another name. Hear me today. I oftentimes say, you know, this lesson can change your life, but this lesson can not only change your life, it can change somebody else's life. Who do you know that you come in contact with every day that you don't really ever express gratitude for? But if you took the time to, it could mean their whole life being different. Let's close the loop, because we have so much to be grateful for.